You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, on our All Cardinals show to start this week. We are here Tuesday night recording our show as we typically do. And I have Seth Cox on the line with us. We'll bring him on in just a second. Tell us about some of the weekend. We'll start talking Cardinals football. Unless you've been living in the hole, but and you are not a football fan, and if you were not a football fan, why in the world would you listen to this show? But you saw and heard your Arizona Cardinals defeat the Chicago Bears 48-23. Yes, 48-23 on the road at Soldier Field, behind four touchdown passes by Carson Palmer, three to Larry Fitzgerald, and then another two touchdowns by David Johnson. One with the opening play, the opening kickoff. He returned 108 yards for a touchdown, and later in the game had a rushing touchdown. So the Cardinals are 2-0 to start the season, and that's what we're going to talk about once we get started. This is the Revenge of the Birds radio show, our 87th episode, brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading audio source, audio content. And if you would like to give Audible a try, you can get a free audiobook download by visiting audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds to get yourself a free audiobook and to test out the service a little bit. And for you Cardinals fans, if you are come across the show through Blog Talk Radio, which is where the podcast is hosted, make sure to head on over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals team site, the site I myself run and write most of the content for, and Seth Cox, my co-host, also writes for. And if you are a member of RevengeOfTheBirds.com, thank you for downloading the show and listening. Of course, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Seth on Twitter at SCoxFB and me at Senor Jess Root or at Revenge of Birds. But let's go ahead and bring on Seth on the line here. Seth, how are you doing this lovely Tuesday evening?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, especially at another Cardinals win. Now, the listeners probably do not know this unless they follow you on Twitter, and then they might. But, Seth, you were actually at the game. You were in Chicago for the weekend, thanks to an early birthday present. So, exactly how was Chicago, and how was being the game in person?
It was awesome. We had a great time. We got in there early Saturday, and then spent Saturday, Sunday, and almost all day Monday with the flight delay in Chicago. But beautiful weather all weekend, and then, of course, kind of top it all off, the most dominant performance of the Bruce Arians on the road in Chicago against what is probably a really bad Bears team without Jay Cutler, and just a bad Bears team with Jay Cutler. And it was exciting and enjoyable to watch. And as bad as Bear fans were towards Jay Cutler, they were very nice to me. So
that's because you're not Jay Cutler. Yeah. which unfortunately is kind of an interesting thing. It's something we won't really talk about, but Jay Cutler, Carson Palmer really are almost the same guy if you look at the numbers they've put up on their career. only Jay Cutler is hated. And if you follow SB Nation, all they put together one of their video series from SB Nation 2. It's really entertaining. It was the disrespecting every NFL game from week 2 in about 3 minutes. And the spot that they did for the Cardinals-Bears game was this. The Cardinals defeat the Chicago Bears 48-23, and Jay Cutler leaves the game with an injury, ruining Bears fans' dreams of a 5-11 season. That's kind of where they were at. And unfortunately, well, as much as I hate Jay Cutler, he's going to miss a couple of weeks. They're going to have to bear with watching football Jimmy Clausen starting. So they might rethink that a little bit. There's a reason why he got paid a lot of money. But, you know, I'd like to get out to Chicago sometime. And as I mentioned to you just a moment ago, that my wife actually has family out there, so I've got an excuse if I want to do it. But the Cardinals come away with a 48-23 win. And on this all-Cardinals show, Seth and I, we're going to talk about our takeaways from the game, the good and the bad. Talk about the running back situation, Larry Fitzgerald's dominant performance. What should we be a little bit concerned about? And there were some roster moves made Tuesday. The return of Bobby Massie is official. He's been reinstated. There was a couple roster moves made. We'll talk about what that likely means moving forward, and then what we expect to see versus the 49ers as they come to town for the first division game of the season. A 49ers team that you were not quite sure. We thought it was going to be a dumpster fire of the year, but had a much stronger showing in week 1 than most expected, and then were promptly torched by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So let's start with the good, of course. Let's always start with the good. What were the main good takeaways that you got from that game?
I think it starts, you know, kind of with the offense again. You know, we'll get to what we could see improved later, but I think when you look at the offense and just it's something that we talk about a lot, but the consistency that we have seen through the offense to not lose too much or, you know, too many three and outs or anything like that. You're seeing a lot of, consistency and ability to sustain and extend drives as opposed to getting the, you know, three and outs or five and outs or six and outs, and then all of a sudden, you know, they run 10 plays and get no first downs, and then, oh, wait, here's three plays and a touchdown drive. You know, it's a little more consistent and a little more, you don't want to say methodical because that makes it sound bad, but, you know, just it's more of a sustainable game plan, it seems like, something that they can do consistently and win. So it starts there for me. And then, of course, I think you have to be excited anytime you see one of the, well, probably the greatest Arizona Cardinal ever, but, one of the greatest Cardinals ever, you know, kind of get to shine through one more time. Obviously, it's not, you know, the end or anything like that, but just to be the best receiver on a Sunday full of guys that put up really good numbers in receiving yards and stats. That's cool for Larry Fitzgerald again.
You know what's fun about Larry Fitzgerald and all? It's stat projections. Talk about this. It's always fun to do this. Through two games, he has, 14 catches, 199 yards, three touchdowns. Projected out for an entire season, that comes out to 112 catches, nearly 1,600 yards, and 24 touchdowns. Woo! No, it's not going to continue. It's not going to continue. But, dadgummit, this feels good to see that Fitz has been so productive with a healthy Fitz and a healthy Carson Palmer. Forget this talk that Fitz is over the hill.
Well, and it's kind of like what we talked about last week. When it comes down to it, you know, I think John Brown's probably their best receiver, and maybe not best being the right term, because that kind of takes away from what Pitts has done, but maybe
the most dangerous probably the most important receiver,
right? But anytime you need a catch, anytime you need, you know, 8 to 12 yards, you're going to look at Larry, and you saw that in the game, and it goes to show you, and I was going to bring this up later in kind of the bad section, but I guess I can say it now. it goes to show you, it doesn't matter how big or how fast or how athletic you are, you know, how physical you are. As a receiver, if you run routes well, like Larry Fitzgerald does, you are going to get consistently open. And if you can't run routes well, you're Michael Floyd. And that's kind of where it's at right now. And, you know, and it's not a shot at Michael Floyd, but it goes to show you.
It like, sure sounded like it, though.
It's a shot at the idea that, you know, we're always expecting Floyd to break out because, oh, he's so big, he's so fast, he's so strong and physical. But he doesn't win in his routes consistently. Whereas, you know, again, look at Larry. What does he do? He goes out on the field. He's probably the slowest receiver on the field for the Cardinals that day. And it really doesn't matter, you know, because he understands the nuances of the game and how to get open and win in routes as opposed to win when the ball is in the air. He doesn't have the ability to consistently do that like he did, you know, when he took over that playoff drive to the Super Bowl and was kind of just putting up numbers that no wide receiver ever had. But now all of a sudden, you know, he can still consistently gain separation, even though he's probably closer to a 4.6, 4.7 guy now, whereas, you know, even John Brown doesn't get the consistent separation on the short and intermediate game like Larry does. And that's what's amazing about Larry and why, you know, as much as we're still waiting for it to click with Floyd and as excited as even I am about John Brown, consistency-wise, there's no comparison to what Larry Fitzgerald does for this offense.
And I'm really excited so far with what the Cardinals offense has been able to do. Now, granted, it is apparently against a pair of just atrocious defenses, but they put 4 offensive touchdowns on the board in week 1, 5 offensive touchdowns in week 2. Yes, they scored 7 touchdowns. One was a return, one was an interception return. So special teams scored once, defense scored once, but still, 5 touchdowns. I don't know. This offense doesn't have the same buzz, I think, as I remember when Kurt Warner did, because Kurt Warner, it was felt like high-flying, okay, they're going to move up and down the field and score. This team just, it feels different. But we've never seen an offense quite as prolific here in Arizona yet. And as you've statistically broken down, Bruce Arians has never had an offense like this before. Bruce Arians' offense has been pretty middle of the road, and where they kind of where they are successful is in the big plays. Otherwise, they're not particularly special. But the Cardinals are kind of doing it all right now. They rushed again for over 100 yards. It wasn't a pretty 100 yards this time. It was a very methodical 100 plus yards. They didn't even get a lot of offensive yardage overall. And they were outgained by the Bears for the second week in a row. They were outgained by their opponent, but they still handily won. But this offense is really, in terms of production, it is so efficient this year.
Yeah, it really is. And that's something that we really haven't seen from any Arians offense. And I think it's just when you go back and you kind of look through his numbers and stuff, the first couple years in Pittsburgh, he was still really heavily running the whiz offense, where it was more of a 50-50 pass run. I think it was like 52-48 in terms of runs over passes. And then the next year, it went 55-45 pass run. And then that's when he kind of lost favor in Pittsburgh with the fan base and even the ownership. When I think it was the year after they won the Super Bowl, they kind of just got away from what Pittsburgh did, which was, you know, run the ball and that ground and pound, and he started having, you know, Ben Roethlisberger drop back 40-plus times a game, and then all of a sudden Ben could never stay healthy because he's getting hit all the time. And, you know, I think now you look at it, and you've got year 3 of Carson Palmer, you've got an offensive line that Bruce Arians has never had the ability or not never had the fortune to coach before. And now, you know, you're seeing the results. And plus you add the weapons, and, you know, like we talked about before, probably one of the better receiving units in the NFL. Then you add in the steady, you know, 3.5 to 4.5 yards per carry of Chris Johnson and the big play ability of David Johnson. And all of a sudden, you know, you've got four consistent performers, and then you've got a Michael Floyd and a Darren Fells who can be, you know, ancillary pieces that can perform in big roles when they're called upon. We saw Darren Fells last week. They didn't need anybody this week, obviously, because of the beatdown and the performance of Larry Fitzgerald. But, it's consistency because of the fact that you've got a quarterback in his third year, and then you've got an offensive line, like I said, that Bruce Arians has just never had the fortune of putting a quarterback behind, and now they're running at a very high rate of success. And I think it was Blake Murphy on Twitter who pointed it out as well. You know, John Brown's numbers aren't really that great per se, but he has something like 97 yards gained on pass interference calls.
That's a real thing too. That's they don't show up in the stats, but they're not going to always be PI because they're going to stop penalizing them, and those will turn into big plays. So those are legitimate yards that they're gaining on John Brown.
Yeah, and so it doesn't help me in fantasy football in my money league, but it, you know what it does do is it helps the Cardinals. All of a sudden, they're on the, you know, I think it was like the inside the 15-yard line two times in that Bears game, as opposed to being, you know, on the other side of the 40 or 50. So it's a huge, huge deal. And like I said, just the consistency that they've had and the different guys. Jerron Brown, even, he showed up in this game. He was kind of the what we expected Michael Floyd to be. And, you know, and Floyd's still coming back from an injury, too. So I don't want to, you know, negate that at all. He's definitely, you know, you can tell out there. I paid attention to him when he was on the field, and he was frustrated. He was frustrated that Carson really wasn't looking his way, and he's not going to say anything. He's not going to, you know, do anything. He's just going to continue to work hard. But you could see that he was, you know, visibly frustrated with the fact that he felt like he had some opportunities and was open, and Carson was going the opposite direction. But to be fair, it works, so it's not like it should even matter.
Right. Another thing to look at offensively is the play of the running backs, and you in particular brought this point to the table a week ago, that taking Andre Ellington was out, so Chris Johnson got the start, and what he ended up was almost exactly the stat line that you thought that he would have and was exactly what the Cardinals needed. 20 carries for 72 yards, you know, 3.7 yards a carry. It's not spectacular by any means. It's not special at all. But there was, and I wanted to look through. So I went through the game plays, and I noticed something. Of those 20 carries, one negative play. One. Now, he didn't, I don't think he gained any. It was very Edgerrin James like, if you think back to the Edgerrin James days when he was an Arizona Cardinal. He was fairly close to the franchise record for rushing yards in a season and didn't have a single run of over 17 yards. Chris Johnson, he had one negative play, but then everything else was between 1 and 9 yards, I think. But that, as unimpressive as that is, that is almost exactly like you said. What the Cardinals need with their running game is to get rid of those negative plays. Andre Ellington gets hit with many negative plays. David Johnson is the type of player who will get hit with negative plays. Chris Johnson finishes plays much better than you would suspect, so he always manages to gain something at least.
Yeah, it's been really impressive. And it was something that you and I talked about, obviously, last week, in that you watch him run and you go, God, this is garbage. But then you look up and all of a sudden, you know, like you said, he's right around that 4 yards per carry average. And he's really keeping the offense on time. And for people that don't understand what I mean is, you have, you know, as an offensive play caller, you have play calls in mind. So if you have, you know, first and 10, you have, first down, you have a set of play calls. Obviously, if it's first and 20, it's a little different than if you're running first and 10 or less. And if you're in second and, you know, average situations, that allows you to do different things. Whereas if you're in second and long, you probably don't want to try to run the ball up the middle again on, you know, second and 10, second and 9. And so then all of a sudden you have to go to your, you know, third down and long type of plays on second down. And so that's what it's about, of keeping the offense on schedule. It opens up the playbook even more, because then all of a sudden, you know, when you're running a power, you know, through the left side behind Ted Larson and Jared Valdir, and you gain 4 yards, then all of a sudden, you know what, if you run power through the right side behind John Cooper and Earl Watford, all of a sudden you're at third and 2. And then you have a world of possibilities that you can open up. Whereas if you're, like I said, second and 9, well, you're probably not going to want to run power again. So maybe you'll run the ball still, but it's going to be an outside run, try to get Andre Ellington to the edge and see if he can get into some space. So just keeping the offense on time allows the offense to flow at a better rate and use the just enormous amount of weapons they have more consistently and evenly distribute the ball throughout, which I guarantee you nobody wants to believe this, but it's already happening in Seattle. We saw it happen here in Arizona. For those of you that don't know, football players get paid for what they do on the field. And when they're not getting the ball, that means that they're not going to get paid as much. So these guys, you know, not everybody, Larry Fitzgerald, who's gotten over $100 million of, you know, guaranteed money in his contractual NFL life, you know, guys like Michael Floyd, John Brown, Jerron Brown, they want the ball in their hands because that's the only way that they're going to get that next big contract and be able to, you know, get paid going forward. And so maybe it'll become an issue. I don't think it will this year, but it's just something that, you know, when you have all those options, it does lend itself to the ability that maybe down the road somebody's going to get their feelings hurt.
And as long as the Cardinals are winning, it won't really be an issue, because if there's one thing players like every bit as much as this, the number, so they can get paid, it's winning. That's what they're taught from the time they're young. Winning, your sacrifice for the team. And if the team is winning, it's easy to sacrifice, but if the team isn't doing so good, then the sacrifices don't seem to make sense. If you look at, I made this comparison, and maybe it's a little bit of a crude comparison, but if you look at especially how David Johnson was used, he's getting kind of the Andre Ellington rookie year treatment and is being really effective. You have Chris Johnson, yeah, who's basically being Rashard Mendenhall. And when I first did that, Brian Geberman, a huge Jets fan, not a Chris Johnson, but I said, oh, that's such a slight. But I did not mean that at all as an insult, because the running game was effective. And especially when it came to Ellington, he became a very dynamic, big play player because of what Mendenhall was able to do. And Chris Johnson is doing that. He's grinding out yards. He's getting your 2 and 3 and 4 yard carries only. So he's Mendenhall plus, but it's keeping David Johnson from having to be that workload guy when he's probably not ready for it. So he got the touchdown. We haven't even talked about David Johnson yet and his return of his play, but he had the kickoff return for a touchdown, and then he touches the ball, carries the ball 8 more times for 42 yards. But if you look at how those yards came about, there were 3 carries of more than 10 yards each. So he had 3 carries for what it was, you know, nearly 40 of those yards, and 5 carries for about another 5 yards. Exactly what Andre Ellington did his first year. And the more he touched the ball, the less effective or less efficient he became. And we know last year a lot of that was because of injuries. But even when we saw it in week 1 with Ellington, it was the big plays that made up for the negative plays, and David Johnson's hit and miss so far But Chris Johnson seems to be exactly what the doctor ordered for this team.
Well, if you look at it, the distribution of runs and effectiveness in yards, it's kind of what we still wonder and we still don't know about David Johnson. So while it's definitely, like, exciting, like I said, like, you hate to say this because Andre Ellington is a really good guy. He's a very good change of pace back. I clearly was wrong in my thing that he could be an every down, you know, kind of 20, 25 touch a game type guy. But like you said, this is Mendenhall and Ellington 2 years ago. It's just the better version of it. And again, that's not a shout at Andre, because what he did his rookie year was very, very special. But David Johnson's basically, you know, in that Ellington role, and
he seems to be a bigger, faster version of him who catches the ball better. Because they talk about how, with the ball skills that Ellington has, he's not got the best hand. He's dropped every pass. David Johnson looks like, because he's played receiver, when he's out there in pass routes, he really looks like a receiver.
Yeah, and so the question still is going to be, what, you know, can David Johnson be a bell cow? I don't think we're going to find out this year, and I think we should all be okay with that. Like, everybody should be like, okay, no big deal. Like, as long as Chris Johnson's doing this nearly 4 yards per carry thing, like, the offense will be fine. Because if you look at DJ's numbers, I can call him DJ because the DJ Humphreys, or the other DJ on the team doesn't play, so it doesn't matter. But if you look at DJ's numbers, like you said, he had 5 carries. 3 of them combined, he had 46 yards altogether, right?
I think it was 8 carries for 42, and then he had the reception for, like, 3.
He got 8 carries?
He did.
Holy cow, I can't ask. See, mine says 5 for 42. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Anyways, but, yeah, he had 2 carries.
No, you're right. It was 5 carries. I thought it was 8 carries. So 3 of – oh, goodness. That speaks – okay, my bad.
Yeah. So 2 of the carries went up the middle, you know, into the heart of the defense. And he gained 2 yards total. So that means those other 3 carries combined for 40 yards, and those were all outside runs on the tackle. Like I said, the question we're going to have for David Johnson going forward, something that we had for Andre Ellington, and I was completely wrong. I thought he could do it. I thought what he showed in his rookie year meant just get him more touches, and he'll be able to carry it over. But David Johnson's going to say the same. If he gets those touches and if he's asked to carry the load, can he be a threat to run inside? He hasn't shown that he can yet, but, again, he hasn't had to. That's really the only question, you know, that we as fans will have going forward. And the honest truth is, like I said numerous times tonight, we shouldn't want to figure out until 2016. Because in 2015, I think with Chris Johnson and David Johnson and when Andre Ellington comes back, there's enough bodies to throw at the defense up the middle that David Johnson can take, you know, the 2 carries for 1 or 2 yards up the middle and then get his other 5 touches outside the tackles and make those plays. Yeah, he's not going to average 13 yards a carry every time he touches the ball outside the tackles. But even if he averages, you know, even if he's at 4.5, 5, that's really special.
And, I mean, now let's talk about how special this kid looked. I mean, he was a guy that I didn't see any film on. I didn't look at any game tape. But based on what Bruce Arians said, he wanted a big, big back who's fast so he can run inside but also kick it out to the outside. And we saw the combine numbers. David Johnson really stood out to me. Then when they drafted him, the way they talked about him, the way he sounded, right, the story behind him, I mean, he's probably the most exciting pick of the draft. And then, well, he got hurt, so he was limited. And now he's gotten a handful of touches. The first time he touches the ball in special teams, a kickoff return, and we know how dreadful that's been. 43 yards. First time he does anything, 43 yards. Wow. Then the next time he touches the ball is on a pass, and then he puts the game away with a touchdown. Then the next time he touches the ball is on a kickoff return 8 yards deep, and he returns it all. He takes it to 108 yards. That changed. I mean, that is such, to open a game like that, such a statement. Something that you know, sort of crushes the other team momentarily because he's getting reeling already. And then again, he's, you know, five carries, 42 yards, and there was a 10-yard run, a 14-yard run, and then there was a 13-yard touchdown run as well. The kid just seems so far to have a knack for really big plays, and exciting. And what's going to be interesting is once Andre Ellington's healthy, what's he going to do? I mean, I imagine he probably won't see many carries at all. It'll be pretty much be in some passing packages, I would have to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, that's what we've talked about before, you know. In fact, there's really no need to, like, if he doesn't come back this week and you run out and you get a similar game, you know, you end up with 20 carries for, you know, 75-plus yards, and you end up with 5 to 10 carries for, you know, 30-plus yards from David Johnson. And you know, what more do you need from a running game? You have two backs getting, you know, just say 25 rushes like he did, and would they have combined 114 yards on 25 carries? That's, you know, that's really good. Like, you don't need much more. And so, you know,
especially
maybe,
it's because it's still a passing offense for the Cardinals. It still will be because you've got Carson Palmer, you've got these receivers, so it's still going to be passing offense. And so if you're rushing the ball 25 to 35 times and you're getting 120, I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, all you're doing then is you're easing the burden of the passing game, which is something that they haven't been able to do in the Bruce Arians era. And so now all of a sudden, you know, you've got offensive linemen blocking well. So now, you know, as we'll get to shortly, but you've got an offensive lineman back, and you've got another one that's coming back, and yet you're running the ball extremely well. You know, what do you do? Like, there's a school of thought along offensive line play that, you know, continuity and feel for each other in chemistry is as important, if not more, than the names on the back of the jerseys. And all of a sudden, you know, Tim Larson and Lyle Finneline are the same guys that have been pretty much, you know,
they were garbage last year. We hated them.
Yeah, they were the Jay Cutlers of the Arizona Cardinals, and now all of a sudden they're part of a running game that's averaging over 4 yards per carry. Like, it's amazing what a year transformation does, and then, you know, what happens from there. You'll just have to, you know, wait and see what they do. But I think it's definitely going to be an interesting conversation, because as much as fans want to go, well, you just plug Iupati back in, like, well, how do you change the chemistry that's been so effective and given the Cardinals their best running game probably since they moved to Arizona? Like, that's a hard question.
Luckily, Iupati happens to be a dynamic run blocker.
Yeah. Well, but the other question is, they haven't given up a sack yet, right? So, I don't know. Like, I just think it's a fun conversation that we're going to have. Like, it's a nice change of pace from, oh, God, when is Iupati getting back? Because Ted Larson sucks. We're going to get this guy out of here. Like, isn't that just, like, such a nice change of pace for a conversation for Cardinals fans? It's, wow, our offensive line hasn't given up a sack in two games, and we've gained over, what, 250 yards rushing in two games? Like, why? Like, let's just not mess with it right now. It's working. Wait till it doesn't work.
Let's move to the other side of the ball defensively. Some things to be happy about, some things not to be super thrilled about. I mean, there were some definite negatives in the game, but when basically the turning point became that interception, which was a huge play, and then, of course, Cutler leaving, it really turned things around. However, if you look at what Jay Cutler was doing early on, you know, his only incomplete pass of that game was that interception. The only one. 8 of 9 for 120 yards. He had the touchdown to Bellamy. There was the miscommunication there. They gave up over 100 yards rushing, which is a little bit of a bummer, but you have to take into consideration the Bears were running a little bit of read option, and so Cutler ended up scrambling 3 carries for 24 yards. And Bruce Arians even said after the fact, like, all right, if Jay Cutler wants to run, go ahead, because he's going to eventually get hurt. They kept Matt Forte. They only gave him the ball 15 times, 61 yards, but the screen game didn't kill them. So, I mean, there was... In the end, Forte ended up with just over 100 yards in total yards, a whole of total offense between the rushing game, the running game, and his 4 catches for 44 yards. But he didn't become a difference maker for them. The Cardinals just didn't look good defensively to start the game. And then, whether that was the start to being on the road with the early time start, you know, things like that, because we saw them struggle as a team in their road games a little bit in the preseason. It's like they had to get some tread going, and then once they got the tread set, it worked, and then it was even worse. They got a couple of sacks, so you got guys with sacks, including Josh Morrow, who looked really good. You had Kareem Martin and Marcus Golden both get to the quarterback, so that's a little bit of you know, something to celebrate there. But what did you see defensively, good, bad, indifferent, that you saw against the Bears that maybe you didn't see during the Saints, or that might raise some concerns?
Obviously, the biggest concern is still the pass defense. Until the interception, and you know, that really that kind of made everything after that invalid. Jay Cutler was just dismantling the Cardinals, and that's after the week before. You know, they gave up a ton of yards to the Northern Saints, and then we all kind of say the same thing. You know, it's the Saints. They get a ton of yards, but then they just got their butt kicked by the Tampa Bay Bucks, right? Like, and so then all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe it's not the New Orleans Saints anymore. Maybe they're just not very good. So I think we still, and I talked to Tyler Nichol about this, and he brought up, you know, a good point that I said, what is the first offense that's really going to be the quote-unquote test for the Arizona Cardinals defense? And it's really not the week 6 when they play the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Ooh, yeah.
So you've got 5 games where you really, like, you know, it's weird to say for Cardinals fans, but you really shouldn't have, like, a ton of worrying about it, because the Cardinals are a better team. And that's just weird to say, you know, when you go into every game going, well, the Cardinals are the better team. So, you still, like I said, you still have some questions about pass defense, but I think for me, I was really focused on watching the rookies and younger guys. So I was focused on Rodney Gunter. That's a conversation we can have, obviously. But, you know, he got pulled. I don't know if pulled is the right word, but he was struggling to hold down the fort, and they ended up moving Calais. They're giving Calais even some run at nose tackle because of it. Then I watched Marcus Golden, and he's one of those guys that just works really hard. I'm not sure what the overall talent level is, but he played well. You know, if not just unspectacularly, I was really impressed with Kareem Martin. I thought Martin looked good. I thought he did a very nice job. In his limited snaps, I think he only ended up with 18 snaps total. So, and then I just think that the growth and continuing growth of the secondary is just really fun to watch, because you're seeing every week more and more in terms of their ability to really take over a game at big opportunities in time. We talked a lot about it with the red zone defense, so to speak, against the Saints. And then this week when they needed a big play, Tony Jefferson made it, and then all of a sudden that kind of just changed the whole outcome of the game. I still think the Cardinals win that game even without C.J. Cutler, but you wonder how much different the score and everything was. So, I was watching, I was really focused on the edge guys because I wanted to see something from them. And I thought, for me, Morrow and Martin were actually the best edge players overall. I wasn't impressed with Alex Okafor or Marcus Golden for the most part in those games, but that's not a bad thing because they were both, like I said, consistent. Not dynamic in any way, but consistent. And honestly, after the last couple of years, they needed that consistency. And Alex Okafor is giving it to him, and Marcus Golden, when he's in, he's not a liability against the run. And, he does offer some pass rush ability. I don't think either of them are guys that you're going to, break the bank for when free agency comes calling, but they are guys that you want on your team and that you can build around. I think you could see Marcus Golden ending up being in the, Purnell McPhee type of realm where he's an 8-sack guy because of his effort, strength, and leverage. And so, I really focused on that on Sunday, and I was impressed with that.
Let's move to something else a little past the game, because obviously moving into this week, we've got the first division game, but it's a home game for the Cardinals. But there were some roster moves made. If you already saw it on Twitter on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, that Bobby Massey, who served his 2-game suspension connected to his DUI arrest back by near the Super Bowl, he was reinstated, which means a roster move had to be made. And it wasn't, as we thought would be the most logical thing to do, and in some ways, it wasn't Bradley Saul. Instead, the Cardinals cut Kerwin Williams, whom they elevated from the practice squad just last Friday. So that leaves the Cardinals with, right now, 3 healthy running backs, and that's it, and 10 offensive linemen. I guess it makes sense they don't trust... What this says, first and foremost to me, is that they don't trust DJ Humphries to be their swing tackle should anything happen, and that they need Bradley Saul. That said, do they really plan on going with... do they trust David... I guess maybe it's this. They trust David Johnson now enough that they're just going to go with the 3, like Arian said that they were going to do originally, but still called up Williams... because I expect Williams to land up back on the practice squad, and they brought another running back in, so they have enough running backs there for practice, and maybe there'll be a case where they elevate someone again, but then you still have to cut somebody. That's an interesting question for me. What I personally would have, would have rather seen Saul go, but then again, we've talked about it a million times that he is Bruce Arians' guy.
Yeah, and I think that just kind of, again, rain to cream on me. It goes to show you that the false idea that Bruce Arians loves rookies and plays them is just wrong. And I think you hit it on the head. They don't trust DJ Humphries, and like I said last week or 2 weeks ago, I think they're basically giving him the Logan Thomas, redshirt treatment. Like, we're not even going to have you active on game days, bud. Like, have fun sitting on the bench, learn to be a pro, learn all the nuances of it, and then we'll see what you can do in 2016.
And it might be something that happens later in the year, because the old adage where you prepare, and Bruce Arians has spoken against this, but kind of the old way of thinking for a traditional way of thinking with rookies is, get them ready for November. What is November? That happens to be the second half of the season. That way they have half a season under their belt. And we've seen that in some ways from how they do with some of the rookies. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that with DJ, where if they have to make a roster move down the line, DJ's shown enough in practice, then they let Saul go then. But with 10 offensive linemen, that's an interesting way to go. The more interesting question is this. The Cardinals haven't at least publicly stated which way they're going to go for the starting lineup. Is it going to be Massey? Is it going to be Watford? Bruce Arians talked about, you know, how Watford has given up too many hits to the quarterback. In fact, I think Pro Football Focus in two games, he's given up 9 pressures and 3 hits. No sacks given up, as no one's given up any sacks. But, you know, it's not great in terms of his pass protection. However, he does really well in the run game. Steve Kimes said that he's earned the right, said in his words, that Watford has earned the right to be on the field. And then it's come up, and this is what I'm suspecting, on Sirius XM NFL radio, Bruce Arians said to Alex Marvez that they hadn't made a decision yet of whether Massey's going to start at right tackle, and I wonder if they're going to give them a look, both a look and practice first, or at least to see where Massey is at mentally, because he hasn't been with the team, hasn't been practicing. But he said if Massey starts, he'll be on a short leash with Watford having done well, which is interesting because Arians himself said on the radio how when they make the decision, that's it, and then they're moving forward. So that tells me one of two things. One, Watford's going to be the guy. Or two, they just don't want to give Massey that public support yet. Because when I say that if he does, he'll be on a short leash, tells me, okay, would it be Massey? I thought initially that would definitely be Massey, but then I remember the quote from Monday saying they're going to make a decision, they're not looking back.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, as you said, like, when you track what Watford has done, and we hit on it last week, he had some issues in the past game, and when it's all said and done for the Arizona Cardinals this year, as much as you and I are enjoying this, you know, brief revival of the run game, Carson Palmer still the engine that drives this thing, and God forbid anything happened to him. So, you know, if Watford is struggling, and, you know, we talked about it last week, he gave up 2 hits on the first 2 throws, I think it was, and you know, he settled in a little bit after that, but he still had some issues, and then this week, you know, Pernell McPhee kind of gave him his lunch a couple times, and that, you know, Pernell McPhee's a good player. There's a reason the Arizona Cardinals were very intrigued by him in free agency, and I think they offered him something like 4 for 32, and I think the Bears ended up at like 4 for 40 or something crazy like that, because they're the Bears, and they offer money to guys like that. and that's what ended up happening, I think. And I could be wrong about that, but I think it was something like that. And that's where it all ended up. And now you have, you know, you have the question is Massey really that much better? And or can Watford kind of pick it up and be the guy? And like I said, I think if Watford's the guy, it's not just for 15. I think it's going to be for 16, too. And it's going to have to be DJ Humphreys growing being able to beat him out. So that's my take on it. I think they'd like Watford to be the guy still, but
They know that Massey, in terms of pass protection, is better. He's not perfect, as we saw last year. He's definitely not perfect, but
no.
Even on his numbers, on the pressure numbers, they weren't great. At least, if you looked at a first part of the season, they were markedly better, aside from the sack part, and in general pressures, it was markedly better than Watford has been in these first 2 games.
Yep, and I think that's what it kind of boils down to, unfortunately. So, you know, I think I might be in the minority that I want stability there for multiple years. And so I'm kind of aboard that's why I was so hopeful in DJ Humphreys, and now, you know, I'm kind of on the let's just go with Watford train. But I understand, like, you got to keep this guy healthy. And if you're not comfortable, if their numbers are, you know, as bad as Bruce Arians is, you know, kind of making them sound like, then yeah, I think you definitely have to. I think you definitely have to make the switch. I think you want to do it now. Maybe give him a week, right? Giving him a lot of practice, right? Like, he had to be away from the team for two weeks.
Yeah, so he hasn't practiced at all.
So, you know, maybe make the change after the San Francisco game. Like, I wouldn't say that this is the end of the discussion, you know, because it is Bruce Arians, so he's basically lying every time he opens his mouth.
But he's so open! He's so candid with the media. No, he's not. He's got the same agenda every coach does.
Yeah. So, but I think for that, I wouldn't be shocked if they let Watford play this week, and then if he has another uneven performance, you're going to just see, you know, Matthew kind of slide in there. They won't make a big deal out of it. They'll just say something to the effect of, you know, we just have some concerns about what he was doing in the passing game, and you know, our number one priority is to keep Carson healthy, so we're going to give Matthew a look here and see what kind of happens from there. And they'll probably say, oh, this is, you know, this is the last thing we're going to do this season. We're going to try to keep everything at the right tackle the same now. And then, you know, if in 2 or 3 weeks Matthew's worse, they might go back to Watford. Who knows? So, but, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if nothing happened this week, and then in week four, I forgot where Matthew's at. I was going by the Matthew game played. In week four, if they're like, okay, let's make this change now, because, you know, we can't have Carson getting hit 3 times a game from the right side, you know, every game.
And if we look ahead to the San Francisco 49ers, what are you looking forward to? For me, I want to see them continue to have success throwing the ball. You look at what Pittsburgh did. Now, granted, Pittsburgh does have as we've seen over the past couple of years, now that Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger have sort of, you know, made peace with one another, they are really, really good in the passing game. But San Francisco looked atrocious, and their pass defense has been atrocious. And guess what? The Cardinals have been doing well, throwing the ball well. Carson Palmer, as we've seen, I don't know if Carson Palmer's played better in his career than he is right now. So we've got the weapons there. Maybe they'll be successful. But I want to see them throw the ball with the same success. I want to see Carson Palmer playing at the same level this weekend as he has the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think I talked to one of my buddies this, and this is what's fun about, you know, expectations and football and all that stuff. I expect the Cardinals to win this game. I won't say fairly easily, because it's still the NFL, but I expect the Cardinals to win this game. And in that, I think I'm going to be really disappointed if they don't, right?
Because yes. Well, if you're looking at it from a big picture standpoint, if we're talking about them as a potential division winner, then the one thing they cannot do is lose division home games. They can't do it. So if we expect them to be contenders in the division at minimum, they have to win at home in their division games. So they have to win. They have to beat the 49ers. There's really no way around that. And if they don't, then we've got to kind of scratch our heads as to, wait, what?
Yeah, and so I think this week, like you said, I think you want to see the continuation of the offense being basically dominant, right? I mean, I think that's fair. And then I think you want to see the defense treat Kaepernick like he's Jimmy Clausen. I mean, you know, I think the whole thing with the defense is you just want to see them shut down a QB1. And that's where, you know, that's the only question I have is, can they slow down the passing game a QB1, and like I said, they did it in the most important part against the Saints, and then they obviously had the one game-changing play, and it really did change the whole game against the Bears. So I think that's kind of where I'm at. I want to see them shut down Kaepernick, who looked awful for most of the game against the Steelers. And let's be honest, I think we, even if we found homers, I think we'd all agree that the Cardinals have a better defense than the Steelers do right now. So,
yes. I really expect this game. The Cardinals won with Drew Stanton at quarterback. They won a 9-point game last year at home. What is the line? I think it's 6.5, I think it was. I feel comfortable right now with the way the Cardinals are playing that we should be able to not only pick the Cardinals to win, but the Cardinals to cover if we're looking for that. This should be, you know, for lack of a better word, the Cardinals, more or less, for both games, from the beginning to the end of the game, have been in control. There were times and doubts where you're like, well, it's not so great. You know, where the Bears tied the score, the Saints got within a score. But the Cardinals were pretty much were in control of all 60 minutes of both games. That's what the game should be like as well.
I agree. And you want to see that. You know, you want to see them shut down Carlos Hyde, who was shut down for the most part in that game against the Steelers. And like I said, you want to see them contain you want to see them contain Colin Kaepernick and really just be the team that we all are expecting them to be at this point. So that's how I look at it right now. Like, I expect this team to win games now. Like, this isn't even last year where you're like, okay, well, let's see what happens with Drew Stanton and everything. This is more of the, let's go. This is just one of those games that, you know, as a fan, it's never this easy, obviously, but you just kind of chalk it up. Like, this should be a win. Like, the San Francisco 49ers aren't on the same plane right now as Bears and Cardinals. So I think we want to see that continue. Like, the first two games were against really bad teams. And
and a third game could be against another really bad team if we go
exactly.
Big picture. So
And the Cardinals took care of business. So they did what they were supposed to do against bad teams. So let's see it again, right?
Exactly. And that'll bring us to a close of the All Cardinals show for this week, for week two, or entering week three for Revenge of the Birds Radio. I have plans. I have not actually hooked up. So hopefully I can actually do a preview show with someone from Niners Nation. It's something I really enjoy doing, are those preview shows. However, if not, at minimum, you will hear from us again. Seth and I will be back recording on Tuesday night, so the next Revenge of the Birds Radio All Cardinals show will be posted and available starting next Wednesday. Thank you for listening. Again, visit revengeofthebirds.com. Hang out there. Follow us on Twitter. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great week, and go Cardinals.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.